When the work you do takes you to other countries, it can open you up to realities and ideas that you might have never considered or expected. For a major Hollywood actor like Martin Sheen, being on location can lead to events and opportunities that aren't included in your script. A couple years ago, Martin and his son Emilio Estevez came to the Rick Steves offices near Seattle to film an interview about travel with me. They included it at the end of their movie, The Way. We invited Martin into our own radio studio to tell us about how his travels have influenced his views and stirred up his political activism over the years. Martin, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
It's great to see you in person and to have you here in our studio. And we've both been sort of inspired by our travels, haven't we?
Very much so. In fact, I had a profound turnaround in my life, and one of the most important events in my life that literally changed the direction of my life was in India in 1981 when I went to do a role in Gandhi.
Yeah.
And I'd been in third world countries, including Central America and the Philippines. But I had never encountered so much horrible, horrible poverty on such a huge level. And, you know, poverty has a look, of course. It has a dimension. It has a smell. Mm-hmm. It has an unbelievable power. It can draw you to itself or it can repulse you. And I was drawn and affected both ways. And luckily, Emilio was with me, as a matter of fact. Hmm. And he used to dive into these crowds of children and beggars on the street and come home barefoot with a pair of shorts. He'd given everything away,
Whoa.
Literally. And he kept asking me, you know, you got, when we'd have a day off or some free time, let's go out on the street. You got to see what's going on out there. You got to go. And finally, I started going out, and it was life-changing.
So that's interesting to me that even on a movie set where there's so much riding on the health and the safety of every player, you actually were out there in the streets on your free time, apparently, and you had a curiosity and an interest
in
that.
We had a great number of people who were called extras or background people. They were people who lived in these locations.
Okay, so you got
who participated in these huge crowds. We were literally in a crowd on the Rajpath in Delhi for the recreation of Gandhi's funeral with 1 million human beings. And all over Delhi for weeks before the filming of the scene, there were flyers everywhere, come dressed of the period in 1948 and join us to celebrate the father of our country, Mahatma Gandhi.
Mahatma Gandhi. That was 81, right?
81, yeah. Mm-hmm.
3 years before that, I went to India for my first time. And it's the first time I was aware of the gap between rich and poor.
Yes.
I didn't even think about it in my privileged little protected upbringing here in Seattle.
Yeah.
And I remember going across, I was in Tehran, and I was sort of leaning up as a poor backpacker, really, against a bank building in Tehran. And I saw there was these beggars and there was these wealthy people, obviously. And then you get to India and you just see it in vivid color. But at the same time, India became my favorite country to travel to because there's a lot of love and a lot of humanity, especially amidst that poverty.
It's unbelievable. You see people who the only way to describe them is enviable joy.
Yes.
Because they're free.
You know, I always say, people ask me, why do you like India? It walloped my self-assuredness, my ethnocentricity.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I like to say it rearranged all my cultural furniture. I thought I knew what pain was. I thought I knew what love was. I thought I knew what music was. And I got there and I'm not wrong, but I'm not exclusively right.
No. And you always know that you have a passport in your pocket.
Yeah.
And you can leave.
Yeah.
These people will never, for the large majority, ever be able to leave.
They'll never see their name on a plane ticket.
No.
And that's a very important thing for us round-trip revolutionaries.
It's unlikely you will ever see any one of those faces again in your life, that they're a gift for that time and place, and that's it.
Martin, you're famously kind of a troublemaker when it comes to demonstrating for peace and justice issues. And
I'd say infamously in some
infamously.
Circles.
I can't believe it. I was studying this, and you've been arrested 68 times for speaking up on issues. Have you ever thought that had you never traveled, you probably wouldn't have such of a difficult time with the law?
No.
imagine a Martin Sheen that had never traveled.
Oh, no, I can't. No, he's dead and gone.
God rest him. We wouldn't be talking to him now, right?
No, I didn't go to many of these places willfully. You know, it was a job, you know.
Yeah.
It's what I did for a living.
Yeah.
I couldn't determine the location or the country or the culture,
right.
You know. So luckily, I was taken in the places that finally, when I did surrender to where I was and what was going on, it had a profound effect on me, and particularly no place greater than India. India,
right.
I mean, it just changed every fiber in my being. I was almost 40. I was 40 years old, so it's half a lifetime ago. And since the awakening that happened, as you know, the expression I used, a friend of mine used to describe what changed him, I would subscribe to it too. I went into the third world, and they cracked open my heart.
Yes. It complicates your life when you travel, if you're a caring person.
Very much so, yeah. I went to Nicaragua when the Sandinistas had just succeeded, and Somoza had been driven out. So it was a new democracy. It was very exciting, and I was invited to come and to participate in their new democracy and to take home what I had witnessed to the United States. And I wrote President Reagan and told him I was in country. I never heard from him, but they couldn't say at least that I didn't let them know I was going. And I got a letter when I got back. I was there for a couple of weeks, and I got a letter from John Poindexter, who was one of his national security advisors. And he said, well, we did receive your letter, but frankly, you are well-meaning but misinformed. Yeah. And so after what I discovered there, I would trust being well-meaning far more than being misinformed.
It was a real high point of our work to have actor Martin Sheen as our guest on Travel with Rick Steves. Martin was with me in 2023 while filming a special travel feature that accompanied the re-release of his movie, The Way. The movie takes place along the Camino de Santiago pilgrim route in Spain. Martin is reflecting with us on how he values what his travels have shown him about the world and how it can inspire us all to take a stand on behalf of others when we get home. Martin, as I mentioned earlier, you've been arrested 68 times, and I'm just curious if the number of arrests has been a measure of what causes are closest to your heart. If you think about your different times you've been demonstrating and then arrested, what are the top three or four or five causes that you've been out on the streets for?
The number one, and still is nuclearism.
Uh-huh.
We came up through the Cold War where we were on ready alert, you know, it seems that we never knew by accident or design the world would end with a nuclear confrontation.
And then after that?
Would be the environment. You know, they're all, well, nuclearism, of course, is connected to our militarism. You know, our nation spends at least 53% of our budget on our militarism. And
a lot of money to make us safer, supposedly,
yeah.
But other
and
things might be a better investment.
You know, you know Europe so very well, and you see infrastructure, travel arrangements, and security, you know, not just security, but health and education,
right.
How much more of their budgets goes to that because they don't have a huge army.
And counterintuitively, you can make a case that it makes them stronger.
Exactly.
And that's the interesting thing. I'm sort of into soft power instead of hard power.
Exactly.
So you have to say, yes, we want to be safe. We want to be secure. And Martin, what about domestic travels and workers' rights? What has your experience been on the road to be more tuned into that?
We try never to stay at a hotel if we can help it that is not unionized, and sometimes we end up in youth hostels and other places along the way. But unionized labor. I was very influenced and inspired by Cesar Chavez, and I got to know him a bit toward the end of his life. In fact, he got me to quit smoking.
And
which I,
that probably let you get arrested a few more times with a longer
times
life.
With Cesar, one of my heroes.
You know, your son Emilio wrote that he remembers as a youngster watching you on TV being hauled away in handcuffs and reciting the Lord's Prayer at the top of your lungs. And he said you almost looked possessed or like crazy. And it took Emilio years to understand the why of it. You know, what is the why of it?
To be present in the time that I live. And to have, if not an effect, at least an opinion. I don't think I've ever really changed any of policies, not towards homelessness, nuclearism, militarism, education, whatever I was protesting against or for. I don't really believe that I had any effect, or at least it wasn't up to me to determine if I had an effect.
Mm-hmm.
The only effect I'm absolutely certain I created was on myself. Mm-hmm. And so that I own those experiences for myself.
That's effect enough.
Yeah, just me. I'm the only one that has changed, yeah. So I do it for myself.
You've lived a life where you've been impacted by your travels, and then you've been involved and engaged in the challenges of our world in a broad, in a global sense, as well as in a local sense. You know, Martin, I love the notion of transformational travel. That's kind of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But it's a lot easier to say than to actually experience. With all of the travels you've done for your various sets on movies and so on, share with us a special moment far from home that was really transformational to Martin Sheen.
Well, it was in India. It was a unforgettable moment where Emilio and I were surrounded by a crowd and mostly children, and a police officer had to come and help us get through the crowd. Literally, it was in Bombay. And he got us to a taxi, and we got in the cab and began to move away from this community, this neighborhood. And I felt a presence a few blocks away from the community. I looked around, and there was a little girl hanging onto the taxi, and her face was inches from mine outside. And we said, please stop the car. And the driver stopped, and she couldn't speak English. I guess she spoke Hindi, you know, but she wanted some money. She was in tatters, and she had this most extraordinary mug. I call people's mug their mug shot, you know, the thing you're going to remember. Yeah. I never forgot her. And it was that sense of profound sense of envy in a way, because she was so joy-filled just to have made this journey, these few blocks hanging on the back of our cab. And we told the driver, okay, let's put her inside and we'll take her back. And we did, and we shared what little we had at that time. And, you know, every time I'm traveling somewhere in third world, I always look over my shoulder. Is there anyone hanging on the back? Now, mostly they'll hang on to your heart, you know, and that's what makes the difference. The people there that you know, as we mentioned before, you may never, and you're unlikely to ever see them again. And if I did see that little girl again, that was 40 years ago.
Those memories, Martin, those memories are the most beautiful souvenir.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you take them home, and then as we live our lives here and when we go into the privacy of the voting booth or however we make our decisions, if we remember the humanity of this planet, we can thank our travels for that.
Yeah, very much so.
Martin Sheen, thanks for joining us. And like they say when you're on the road, buon camino.
Keep on traveling.
Keep on traveling. You can hear more of our full-length interviews with Martin Sheen in our Travel with Rick Steves show archives. And there's actually a link so you can watch the interview with me, Martin, and Emilio that ended up in the movie. It's in the notes for this week's show. You'll find that at ricksteves.com/radio. Because I travel so much of the year, I find it comforting to come home to the town I was raised in. After all these years, I still live in Edmonds, Washington. It's the little town that launched me into a European traveler. Joining me now for a glance back at how our travel adventures turned into a career is my original travel buddy from high school, Gene Openshaw. He also joined me 5 years later on our epic On the Hippie Trail from Istanbul to Kathmandu backpacking trip, and Gene now co-authors the Rick Steves Art Appreciation books. Here's how it all started as a pair of teenagers vagabonding our way across Europe right out of high school in the summer of 73. Okay, let's go back. Let's go back to the year 1973. Richard Nixon was facing Watergate. The world was facing an oil crisis. And two teenage boys from the suburbs of Seattle were heading off to Europe on their first trip, the first time overseas, away from their parents, the first taste of high culture. And that was me and Gene Openshaw, our first trip to Europe on our own. I'm joined by Gene Openshaw now. He was my travel partner back in 73, and he's been working with me for the last 40 years. Boy, it makes me feel a little bit old, but we're still young at heart. And Gene's the co-author of several of my guidebooks. Gene, how did a couple of kids like us, with no cultural background, grow up to be talking about art and history now on the radio?
Well, let me take you back to our first trip. I brought something here. Hoping to kind of spark some memories of what
travel
was
like
back
then.
A few coins from the pre-Euro days. Here, look.
Okay, we're talking 73. So back then, we had a Deutschmark, we had a franc, a Greek drachma.
Here's a lira.
And a Norwegian, a Danish crown with a hole in it. I love it.
Europe back then was quite different than travel today. You just think about some of the most basic things that we take for granted, like phone calls. If you wanted to make a phone call, you had to gather a bunch of coins like this.
Pop them in. You'd get all the coins you could gather, pop them in, and you get to talk 1 minute to your girlfriend or your mom and dad.
Yeah. The world wasn't globalized. Very few people spoke English. And I really had the sense, I don't know about you, that we were kind of on our own out there, sort of the dark side of the moon.
And it was the Cold War, and that was scary. I remember standing in Berlin next to that wall, and it was scary. Crossing borders, just remember, you know, angry dogs and strange people coming at 2 o'clock in the morning to take your passports.
And you did not question them.
No, no.
Yeah, Europe was kind of a battlefield, a battleground between these two nuclear superpowers.
But way back then, I still think there was the seeds of globalization. It was like we were on the edge of a new world.
You know, remember this? We're on the Rhine River. We're at that castle in, was it Bacharach? Where you're up on that hill.
Yeah.
Beautiful summer night. We're out there. We're a couple of teenagers, and we're surrounded by a bunch of other teenagers and their hormones. And I did get a sense of globalization because we all had some things in common. We all had gotten Eurail passes.
We all had $3 a night for a bunk at the youth hostel there.
Yeah, yeah.
We're all fascinated by medieval castles.
And fascinated by pop culture. That was about the only thing we had in common.
That's true.
You know, the Beatles. She loves you, yeah, yeah,
right, yeah,
yeah. Ah, das ist gut.
Right.
You know, or talking about Hollywood movies.
And Coca-Cola, everybody wanted a Coke.
That's where I thought we really connected with the Europe that was coming of age and would become the globalized world.
We learned a lot about culture, even though I remember just going to the museums because my mom said it'd be a crime not to, but stepping into those museums, we did gain an appreciation of high culture.
Mona Lisa, that knocked my socks off.
Stepping into St. Mark's Square in Venice, oh man. Stepping into the greatest cathedral in Europe, St. Peter's Basilica.
Oh man, yeah, the Baroque, the gold leaf, the statues.
You know, we didn't probe too deeply into it, but we did have a respect for what people did centuries ago.
And when we came back, we weren't art scholars by any means, nor are we now. But we do at least have a knowledge and understanding of what's out there. But, you know, we learned a lot from the museums and the art. But what really taught me the most, I think, was just the fact that Europe was so different then. It was kind of jarring when we went there. It kind of opened our eyes. You know, we're in Amsterdam and you're seeing these hippies and freaks and smoking pot and the girls on Zeedijk Street and the sex trade. And for a couple of teenage boys, that was kind of you're kind of trying to figure it all out.
We were like two little rhesus monkeys huddling together and hugging each other, trying not to get into too much trouble.
See no evil, hear no evil.
But when we flew home, the world was our playground.
Yeah.
I remember looking back in my journal from that trip, there were so many just mistakes that turned into great experiences. Two kids opening up to the rest of the world.
It was a bit of a rude awakening, but it was probably a healthy one for a couple of young kids from the suburbs.
I'm sure thankful for that trip. That was the best trip ever, Gene. And what's great in my mind is that those kind of wide-eyed Wonderland adventures that we had when we were 18 years old, so many decades ago, kids are having them today, too. It's still possible, and that's the magic of travel.
Go for it, guys. Trucking. I'm going home. Whoa, whoa, baby, back where I belong. Back home, sit down and patch my bones and get back trucking. Come on, come on.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington by Tim Tatton,
Donna Bardsley,
and Casimira Hall.
Website uploads are by Sherry Quirt and Andrew Wakeling.
Promotion support comes from Sheila Gerzoff, and our theme music is by Jerry Frank.
You'll find more at ricksteves.com/radio.